Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, Episode 4 for October 27th, 2006, Build 6000. It's time to find out what... What's happening with Vista? It's the new name of the podcast. What the heck's happening with Vista? Windows Weekly episode, is it three or four? It's four, isn't it?
It's four.
Wow. Paul Thurrott is here from the super site for Windows and Windows IT Pro. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, today we're going to talk about Windows Build 6000. We're going to talk about Vista Express, Motion Desktop, Windows Media Player 11, and we'll wrap things up with a little Dell versus Apple support saga, both of which I understand have a happy ending. We'll get to all of those today on the show. But let's start with Build 6000. What do you hear about the current state of Vista?
Well, there's I've been writing a lot lately about some of the stuff that's been going on internally because since RC2, they haven't released any more builds publicly. And as of last week, they had a build out internally 5840 that was in what they call escrow to become the final build. And as of today, actually, they bumped that up to 5920. And they have, I guess, admitted internally that they're going to do what a lot of people thought they would do, which is just artificially bump the final build number right up to 6000.
You know, that's funny because speaking as a consumer, more builds doesn't give me more confidence. If it took 6,000 builds to get it right, I'm not thinking, oh, wow, that's good. You know, it's good they didn't only have 5,000 builds.
Yeah, it isn't technically, you know, 5,920 builds. I mean, they've bumped it up at different points.
You want to talk about what are builds and what do these numbers mean? The RC2 was build 5820, right?
RC2
I can't even remember.
5744,
okay. What is a build, first of all?
It's a build. So a build is a slice-in-time version of the operating system. So when a system like Windows Vista is being actively developed, an operating system, they'll build a new version of it every day. And the term build literally comes from the software process they use to compile it all together, and they literally build it up from the source code to the finished product that can be installed on computers.
I think the command in Visual Studio is build, isn't it? It's just to take all the source files, compile them, assemble them, make a working product.
Right. So, typically, this isn't always true, but typically, you would increment the build number one time a day. And there's all kinds of permutations of that in Windows Vista, so it's not even worth discussing why or
Because the 6,000 builds would be 18 years, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. They could just roll the roulette wheel, and today's build...
6,000 daily builds. No, it can't have taken that long.
Oh, no, it didn't. And I've been recapping the development of Longhorn recently, and I was just writing this up before we talked today, and it's funny because they jumped whole 1,000 numbers at a time at some points, you know, so they've really jumped around a lot.
It's almost like release numbers. You make a big number when it's a big, you know, step in the process, I would imagine.
Yeah, and back in the old days, you know, when before NT became the common code base for all the Windows versions, back in the Windows 95, 98 days, they used to actually try to change the build numbers at the end to make it relate in some way, you know, to the version of Windows. And I'm not going to be able to pull one of these off the top of my head, but I want to say that Windows XP I'm sorry, Windows 98 second edition was something like 2222, you know, because it was the or something like
that. Yeah, that makes sense. So we're at what build are we at now? 5980?
It's not remembering, but 5920 is the build as of today. I saw some documentation today that said that they are in fact going to bump it up artificially to 6000. Right.
You know, the one number that everybody probably cares about is how many bugs are left. They said they won't ship until they're down to, what did you say, 500?
Well, no, shipping isn't so much 500. 500 was so that it could go into escrow for RTM, and they did, in fact, hit that actually now about 2 weeks ago. So they're in the sub-500 range somewhere now. I haven't seen a more recent figure since then.
That's encouraging. In the old days, companies would have a pizza party that day or two before you ship, and they would have a bug hunt, and they would give prizes out for the people who find bugs, things like that. I suppose we've matured as an industry more than that.
Microsoft will probably rent Hawaii, you know, when they I mean, it's a little bigger these days.
No pizza party anymore. It's a luau
by Italy.
So how close are we to an actual RTM? RTM means
release to manufacturing. Literally the moment where they take a CD with the final version and they bring it to a manufacturing plant that manufactures the DVDs that go out to, you know, the retail boxes and the PC makers and so forth.
And when is that going to hit the shell or the whatever, the mail?
We talked about that RTM window before where they wanted to hit this thing on or before October 25th, and we know they didn't do that. But as we discussed in a previous show, you know, they had this window where between October 25th and November 8th, they could hit that time period, and they have an internal countdown clock, right, which was recently reset to point at November 8th. So it will be on or before November 8th. My feeling is it will be before November.
We said if they didn't make it by October 25th, they'd be taking out languages. That was the threat. What languages have we lost, Paul?
I think that threat is the equivalent of when you're driving in the car and you threaten that you're going to pull over if your kids don't, you know, shut up.
Don't make me take out Croatian.
Exactly. So I don't know that they have actually taken out any language version.
If I have to pull out Italian, you're trouble, buddy. That's right. Funny. So we did they do anything because they slipped a little bit?
Not that I know of, no.
You know, when you're talking about 2 years worth of slipping, 10 days is not the end of the world.
No, but, you know, and it shouldn't be surprising that as we get close to this actual deadline, that this thing would get a little crazy, you know. I mean, and again, as I just said, I've been researching this stuff recently, so it's all fresh in my head. But, you know, when you talk about the sheer length of time they've been working on this and the number of times they've missed, you know, various milestones and so forth.
Well, you know, take us down the Longhorn trail. We don't have all day, but... In a brief thumbnail, when did this all begin and how?
It began before Windows XP was finished. And actually, it was a good friend of mine at Microsoft who slipped the Longhorn codename out by mistake to a reporter from eWeek back in, I want to say, July 2001. And at the time, we thought that the follow-up to Windows XP was going to be something called Blackhome. Am I saying that right? Yeah, Blackhome.
Yeah, Blackhome. I remember that. Yeah, dimly.
And Blackhome was, like Whistler, which was the codename for Windows XP, was a mountain up in British Columbia where a lot of people from Microsoft go skiing. So those two mountains became the codenames for those two versions of Windows. Longhorn is a Longhorn, which was the codename for Windows Vista, is a bar between the two mountains. And as somebody told me from Microsoft that year, you know, you can't get from Whistler to Blackhome without first going by Longhorn. You know,
They named Vista after a bar. The code name for Vista is a bar, like a bar, like a bar and grill bar.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Usually you use something more lofty, as you know, mountains. That's good. Rivers. That's what Intel uses. Bars. Right. Boy, that's the first I've heard that one.
Yeah, so, you know, in the early days, it was going to be a minor release, right? So in the beginning, it was just seen as sort of a Windows XP second edition, something.
So Blackhome was really where they were thinking they were headed.
right, was going to be the big one. So, you know, in the ensuing years, that's gone up and down. You know, a year later, you know, Bill Gates revealed that he was spending 50% of his time on Longhorn. It was going to be one of those kitchen sink releases. It was the biggest thing in the world. You know, they were going to redo everything. You know, and I'd say from that point on, the delays began, right? I mean, Longhorn was originally expected to ship in 2003, and then it was 2004, then 2005. You know, I'm writing about the 2004 time frame right now. So in that year, in August, they announced that they would ship it in 2006. So they're finally doing that now, I guess.
They made it. They made it.
Sort of. But that's a long time, you know. And I'd say the other major event that occurred between, you know, say 2001 and this year is that in 2004, they reached a point where they realized they weren't going to make it. And we didn't discover this until a year later, but, you know, in April of that year, they basically looked at this, all this stuff they had built, and they said, we have to tear this thing down and start over from scratch. We can't. It's a work. It's a teetering tower, you know, waiting for disaster. And that's what they did. So they reset it. And that took several months, and it wasn't until very late in that year that they began piling the features back on the new code base.
Was the my understanding, I think you said it, was the code base is actually Windows Server 2003. Was that the point where they started building it on 2003?
That is correct. Before that, it was based on you know, Windows XP. And don't I wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, anytime a new Windows version is started, what they do is they grab the most recent version because it has, you know, the best security, the right. You know, is more, et cetera. So
this
it's not.
This isn't. You can't say this is built from scratch.
No, they're never really built from scratch. But, you know, Windows Vista as a more componentized version of Windows was really deconstructed and rebuilt, you know, as a different kind of thing than its predecessors. And that has ramifications for deploying and migrating and so forth. But, you know, there's a lot of work that goes on there. You know, just to start with something they can say, okay, here's where we're starting from. Now let's start tacking features on here and seeing how it works.
Well, we finally made it. It's been a long road. I look forward to reading your history of Longhorn on WinSuper site.
I look forward to it.
it's been as long writing as it has been doing it. So we look for a November 8th release to manufacture of Windows Vista Build 6000. And now, if they release it to manufacture November 8th, what happens after that?
Well, you know, the first external thing that you're going to see is the volume license business versions will go out to Microsoft's close partners. I mean, those few companies that are going to try to roll this thing out right away will be able to do so sometime beginning in late November, presumably, or mid-December.
Because they don't have to wait for a CD to be pressed or anything. They just take the code and they blast it on the machines.
Or they can download it.
You know, does that mean I could go out and buy a Dell in that time frame and it would have Vista on it?
No. No, Microsoft is, and you know, this is one of those things, we'll never really know the truth of this, but Microsoft, in tandem with its partners, you know, and the hardware makers, the PC makers, et cetera, sometime in January, there'll be a consumer launch. And from that point on, you'll be able to order and purchase, you know, PCs with Windows Vista installed. You'll be able to go into a retail store and buy a box copy of Windows Vista if that's what you want. That won't happen until January.
Although the Windows Express, the Vista Express upgrade is now on its way. This is the plan for giving people coupons. So what's the status with that?
Right. So when you think about purchasing or acquiring Windows Vista, there are a number of avenues through which you can do so, right? You know, like we just said, starting in January, you can walk into a store, buy a box, walk out with a disc. You know, that's one way to do it. The problem is, it's not coming out until January. That doesn't make for a very exciting holiday selling period, right? So I think because there are fears that people will actually hold off on new PC purchases if they can't get Windows Vista immediately, Microsoft is working with its partners to, you know, basically have a discount coupon program in place so that people who buy new PCs from either major PC makers like Dell or HP, or system makers, you know, local companies, smaller companies, with Windows XP pre-installed beginning October 26th through March 15th of next year, we'll get a coupon either for a free or a discounted price on an equivalent Windows Vista version.
Now, that's key because it's a cross-grade. How do the versions match up?
Right. So there's a table, you know, that you can look at on I have an article about this on the site, but what it breaks down to basically is that if you acquire a computer with Windows XP Media Center Edition on it, you'll be able to get a free or very low cost, you know, aka shipping and handling type of thing, version of Windows Vista Home Premium.
Now, so that's great. I mean, that means and that starts when, that coupon program?
26. So by the time anyone hears this, they'll
that's
be able
today,
to buy.
Yeah. So they or yesterday. So when I buy a PC now, well, if it says Vista Ready, it will have that coupon. How do I know it's got that coupon?
Exactly. How do you know? So as we're recording this, I have yet to see anyone promoting this. The way this works is you can't just buy a PC. You know, you have to make sure that this program is in place. So companies like Dell and HP, if you go up to their website, they should have something there that will, you know, some type of a logo or something that will tell you you're getting that. And you want to make sure that you are getting that. And if you buy it from a local system maker, you want to make sure if you buy it this, you know, in the coming months and it has Windows XP on it, make sure that you're getting that free copy of Windows Vista. You know, confusingly, the actual price you're going to pay can vary from PC maker to PC maker. So I'm going to throw these two company names out. This is not necessarily the deal, but HP may charge you $14.95 for shipping and handling, whereas Dell may charge you $9.95.
So that's,
you
know, that's at their discretion. You're not getting it from Microsoft. You're getting it from your vendor.
Right. It's never from Microsoft. And when you think back to some of the lawsuits that occurred after the Microsoft antitrust trial in the United States, a lot of them were thrown out because people don't actually buy anything directly from Microsoft. Right. They're buying it through a third party, which is the PC maker. So these types of things always have to occur through the PC maker, not through Microsoft.
That's very clever on Microsoft's part. So you should be looking when you're buying a computer starting today for the Vista Express upgrade. Now, don't confuse that with the Vista Anytime upgrade.
Right. Which is another one of those avenues, which they still have not announced the pricing for. So we know what the retail price is for Windows Vista now. We know what Express upgrade cost is, but we still don't know what the Anytime. These names are so confusing.
That's one of the reasons I'm kind of emphasizing this is you know, you got to know what you're buying. You'll see the word upgrade. It may be not be the kind the upgrade that you're expecting. The Express upgrade is the free upgrade. Well, or free or very low cost upgrade.
Shane, we should step through the other options.
From XP to Vista. So, right. So give us the rundown. By the way, and you said it, but I'll reiterate it, winsupersite.com. Paul's got a great article on this with all the details.
Yeah, it's simple to look at in a chart form. But Windows XP Professional, Tablet PC, or the X64 version are all upgradable free to Windows Vista Business. In the case of the X64 version of XP, you'd get the 64-bit version of Windows Vista Business. So free or nominal fee, right? If you somehow manage to get a computer these days with Windows XP Home Edition, which is actually pretty rare, they seem to have replaced those with Media Center Edition over the past year. But if you do manage to get a PC that is Home Edition, you can upgrade to Windows Vista Home Basic or Home Premium for 50% discount off of the retail price of the upgrade versions of those products.
50% off the upgrade version. Okay.
So let's say in the United States, for example, if I'm not mistaken, and you might know this to be untrue. I can't remember. I'm bad with numbers, but I believe that Windows Vista Home Basic upgrade is $99.
That sounds about right. Yeah. So you get it. Get it for 50.
Right.
$49.95 or whatever it is.
So if Home Premium is, you know, $199, and again, I'm pulling that number out of thin air. I don't actually remember. Then you would pay, you know, $99 or $100.
I think the non-upgrade list for the only one I really remember is a non-upgrade list for Ultimate. I think that was $300, wasn't it? Or $299?
Yeah. $349 or even $399.
Was it more? Oh, man.
Funny.
Now, you buy a computer today, you'll get a low-cost cross-grade.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the higher end versions of Windows, if you had Home, you won't get an upgrade. You'll pay one half of the normal upgrade cost of whatever version of Vista you're getting.
Right, and actually, you know, if you think about it, if you want to spend a lot of money, you
of
could
course.
Actually
who wouldn't?
Oh, why not? Think about the various permutations of this, right? You could buy a computer today with the Windows XP Home Edition. You could pay $50 to upgrade to Windows Vista Home Basic, and then you could use the Windows Anytime upgrade inside of Windows Vista to upgrade to Home Premium or Ultimate Edition for another X number of $100. You know, you could go, you could just keep upgrading. You go.
This is something that is a little different about this particular version of Vista. Every disk has every version of Vista on it. You're essentially getting a disk that has everything all the way up to Ultimate on it. But you could at any time go online, and you've got a screenshot on your website of this Windows Anytime upgrade, and you can you could just press a button and upgrade.
That is correct.
Presumably taking data off the disk that you already have. I have to say, I'm looking at the window to encourage you to upgrade, and I've never seen more nebulous language about what do you get.
Right.
I mean, here it says Windows Vista. Here's what you get: Windows Vista Home Premium. So you'd be upgrading, I guess, from Home Basic, because that's what you have. Experience better digital entertainment and personal productivity on your computer with improved reliability, security, and performance. Well, that sounds good. Windows Vista Ultimate, the most versatile version of Windows that combines the entertainment and ease of Windows Vista Home Premium with the power and security of Windows Vista Business.
So they've just described three levels of security.
I have no idea. And are there three levels of security?
I can tell you from sort of a mile high view that when you go from Home Basic to Home Premium, what you're getting is Windows Aero, which is that nice translucent user interface, and you're getting Media Center, you know, that TV, DVR.
That's a productivity enhancer.
Yeah. So Windows Vista Ultimate adds a bunch of the business-oriented features that you wouldn't see in Home Basic or Home Premium. So I think for a lot of people, ultimately, that will be a little bit of overkill.
But you know that most enthusiasts, anybody listening to this podcast, is going to be buying Ultimate.
Well, maybe. But then again, it's awfully expensive. So I think one of the things people really should look at is, you know, what do they really need? With the understanding that they can always upgrade later if they want to.
I do like that feature. It's very easy to upgrade. You don't have to go back to the store. You just press a button.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, you'll need your wallet handy.
Microsoft's good at making it easy to spend money.
Yes. That's an innovation. I believe that's innovation that's available in all versions of it.
Okay. Let's not be too cynical here. So now let's talk a little bit about Motion Desktop. That's next on our agenda. What is Motion Desktop?
This one's interesting because I had actually never heard anything about this. I've got some friends over at a website called AeroXP.com who had discovered that Microsoft was adding a feature to Windows Vista called Motion Desktop. And there had been something floating around for a long time called Aurora.
Oh, yeah. I remember that was an incredible demo.
Yeah. And if you look at those kind of spidery light reflecting, you know, backdrops that Microsoft has in Windows Vista today, those are called Auroras. You know, that's the Aurora with a lowercase a. You know, and the default desktop in the shipping version of Windows Vista is going to be a green, yellow, and blue Aurora of some sort. You know.
Okay.
Well, Motion Desktop, I think, is sort of the scaled down actual feature that they're shipping in Windows Vista, but it's going to be one of those Ultimate Edition extras. You know, it's one of the things you only get when you purchase Ultimate Edition.
At AeroXP.org, they say basically it's animated desktops.
Correct. Right. This is, you know, it's funny, and this was literally 10 years ago. I was in a Best Buy in Phoenix, and I was walking by the aisle where all the Windows 95 machines were lined up in a row, and somehow the visual effect of my, you know, my vision off to the side, I looked like the cloud backdrop was actually animating on the desktops.
Ooh.
And they stopped. I went back, and it was just a visual effect. Those desktops were all, in fact, just static. But I remember thinking at that time, you know, that would be kind of a nifty thing. You know, those clouds could kind of float by slowly. And so it appears they're actually doing that. And there are going to be three or four of them, I guess, out of the box. And, you know, developers will be able to create other versions. But, you know, these guys had broken the news about this, and you can read about it if you go to aeroxp.org/md.html. You can read the story, and there's a bunch of forum posts about it. But I finally just asked the source. I don't typically do this, but I was kind of intrigued by this, so I actually went and asked. I said, "Is this? I've never heard of this. Is this true?" And he said, "Yeah, actually, it is true." And you know, we're going to ship it after RTM. You know, you won't see it in the RTM build. You'll have to wait until early January is when they'll actually ship it out to the web service so that people can download it.
But if you have Ultimate, it'll be a free upgrade.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, you know, they've been very close-lipped about this. You know, Jim Alchin has said this publicly. I met with some guys from the Windows team within the past 30 days, and I've asked them, I said, you know, are there any surprises coming? I mean, is there anything, you know, people have been talking about this or this or this? I mean, what is, are you planning anything else? And they both have said the same thing, which is some secrets coming, and we can't really talk about it. But, you know, expect a few secrets by launch, and I think this, you know, this is clearly one of them. So not that it's a huge feature necessarily. I mean, I know there are going to be downloadable games that will be unique to Ultimate Edition through Ultimate Extras and so forth. So
this is an Ultimate Extras feature. Is that like the Plus Pack? Is that a paid thing, or is that just something you get?
Well, it's something you get, but only if you get the Ultimate Edition. So you're paying extra to get Ultimate, and this is one of the benefits.
All right. I mean, it is more expensive, but I imagine that people will be getting Ultimate. When you go to the store to buy a Vista PC, will there be seven different kinds of PCs, or what will be the common choices you'll have?
Microsoft has told me that they expect Home Premium to be the volume version at retail. You know, and in that sense, it will replace Media Center, XP Media Center Edition, which today is actually the volume version at retail.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, I never really understood why that's the default operating system, since, I mean, that seems like a specialty is recording television. I mean, that doesn't seem like something everybody wants to do with every computer.
I think, you know, it's funny to watch how that evolved, because when the first version came out in 2002, it was very much a niche offering. You know, there were very few PCs that offered it. They were much more expensive. But I think over the years, you know, PCs have grown in capabilities. And one thing that they've discovered is that the vast majority of people who use Media Center and really enjoy it don't use it for TV features at all. You know, they just use it to organize and experience their, you know, the digital music or the videos or whatever. And so you could be on a laptop, on a plane. You don't need a remote control. I mean, it works with a mouse and everything. So it's just a nice interface. And, basically at some point along the way, they decided, you know, we need to cost reduce this thing and just, you know, get rid of the requirements that you need a TV tuner in the box.
I see.
And let's make it the volume version.
So it's kind of like Apple's Front Row, where it just comes with a computer and it's an interface to your media. And it's really not necessarily about recording the TiVo experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the features, and it works great. And, you know, as we may or may not have discussed, I can't recall anymore, but we have a Media Center PC in our den. This is the way my kids experience TV, and it works really well. But if you want to just use it to see, photo slideshows with the music playing in the background, it works great for that, too.
All right, well, we'll look for... Motion Desktop sounds cool. Do you know what the underlying technology is? Is it Flash? Is it some Microsoft format? Is it going to be easy to make other Motion Desktops?
Yeah, no, I really don't know. I'm guessing, you know, there are versions of this type of thing, animated desktop backgrounds that exist today. They cancel out the icons on the desktop. They have some, limitations to them and so forth. My guess is that it's an active desktop-like layer over the desktop that is probably based on DirectX.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Moving on to Windows Media Player 11. It's weirdly disconnected from Vista, but I think of it as a Vista product. It's due soon, though.
It was due a few days ago, and this is one of those cases where Microsoft has been so quiet about this product, they never really say much about it. And earlier this month, they sort of vaguely announced as part of something else that, oh, by the way, we're going to ship the new version of Windows Media Player on October 25th. Or actually, it was October 26th. And that day kind of came and went, and they said, actually, it's going to happen next week. Sorry.
Never mind.
Yeah, it's almost like anytime they release or announce a release date, they don't make it on purpose at that point. Yeah.
So you wonder why they even bother to announce these things. I mean, wouldn't it be great if it just a Microsoft product just appeared? Oh, I guess that's kind of what happened with IE7.
Yeah, well, that's what happened with Windows Defender.
That's right.
You know, I knew IE7 was coming because I talked to those guys, but Windows Defender was sort of funny. I mean, this thing has been in beta for 2 years. It just appeared one day. And then later in the day, I got a call, and they said, hey, do you want to talk to someone from the Windows Defender team? I said, yeah, that'd be great, but where were you guys last week? I mean, it's a little strange, you know, but...
What is the status of OneCare and Defender in Vista? Is it the same kind of thing as it is in XP? You got to buy it, you get it free for 3 months on 3 machines, and then you have to buy it if you want to keep it?
Yeah, it's the same thing. So there's a beta version of it out now. Version 1.5 works in Windows Vista. I actually really like OneCare Live a lot. And in the Vista version, there's much deeper integration between OneCare itself and Windows Defender. So instead of launching Windows Defender, it can actually run the spyware scans through the main interface. Mm-hmm. So it actually does deeply integrate with that, you know, the back-end service or whatever. So it's nice.
I have to think that that's... I mean, I don't know if it's the world's best anti-spyware or the world's best antivirus. I think there might be better out there. But the integration just makes it so much easier, such a pleasure to use, that I think it's a pretty compelling argument, as long as it's a decent antivirus. And I think it's probably better anti-spyware than a lot of the stuff out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think what people are finding is that you really need two anti-spyware applications that running at the same time, because no one actually is good enough to catch it all. But the Windows Defender is excellent, and the company that used to have that technology, Giant Company Software, was fantastic, and I was all over that product back when they owned it, and I was ecstatic when Microsoft bought it. I'm surprised that it took them 2 years to come out with the final version, but you know, whatever. I'm glad it's out now. So,
how about the antivirus? Where'd they get that from?
A variety of places, actually. They bought, I'm going to forget the name of it off the top of my head. It begins with a G.
It was an enterprise antivirus, I remember.
Yeah, so they purchased a bunch of different antivirus solutions. And now you're seeing that in Windows Live OneCare on the client, but they also have these forefront security products on the server. And it's interesting, if you use them with Exchange, they actually let you pick between any number of antivirus solutions, including the one that they create. So you can have all those things running at the same time and eventually get to the point where, in your particular situation, you've got the right, you know, number of things running and catching, you know, viruses and so
forth. GCAD. That was it. GCAD. Right? GCAD software?
You're right. I had G in my...
Yeah, you had it. So in your experience, I mean, one of the things I've always hated about Norton and McAfee is how much they slow the system down. Just
exactly.
Judging from my kind of... No, not benchmarks, but just kind of experience. OneCare seems to integrate so smoothly, it doesn't seem to slow it down at all.
Right. That's why I love it. The only thing that OneCare does I don't like is it's annoying. And they're fixing this a little bit in 1.5, but they're not going far enough. And that is, it will actually say to you, OneCare detected, you know, name your application, Windows, Mozilla Firefox, and allowed it to access the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Just want to let you know, it's okay.
You know what? I don't mind getting alerted when something bad happens, but I don't want to be alerted when something good happens. And that's one thing that the Windows Defender guys got right, and it's one thing that Windows Live OneCare does not get right. And I'm hoping through the course of 1.5, they'll fix that. So what they added in 1.5 was a checkbox where you can say, do not alert me. But what they need is two checkboxes, and one is, do not alert me for, you know, events that you allow. Do not alert me for events not allow. You know, want one but not the other.
I don't need to know that you didn't have a problem with that program. Thank you very much. I have to say, Defender, you're right, is very transparent. Mm-hmm. I think that's what users look for. They want protection. They don't want to have a lot of interaction with it.
Well, yeah, and what Microsoft said was that the type of people who are buying OneCare today are not necessarily very sophisticated, and that, you know, apparently they like this kind of thing. But I had a joke running with a guy from what used to be MSN and now is the Windows Live team, and I said to him, I'll tell you what, every time I get one of these little pop-ups, I'm going to take a photograph of it and I'm going to email it to you. Let me know when that starts getting annoying. You know, because it's just annoying. I don't need that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, Vista's gotten a lot better. It used to be incredibly annoying. It would tell you about everything and ask permission before it could do anything. And now they've obviously toned that down quite a bit.
Right.
Can you run Vista? I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but can you run Vista in a limited user mode and use it effectively? I mean, that's always been a problem I've had with XP. You really don't want to run as administrator. It's not safe, but it's almost impossible to run as a limited user.
People who supposedly do that in Windows XP, and I, as an experiment, for a month, and this might have been 2 years ago now, tried to do that, and it is absolutely impossible. Yeah. It is impossible.
There are third-party tools that make it easier, but you're right. So how is it in Vista?
It's fine. It works fine. Assuming you know the administrator password, you know. But yes, if you actually want to run Vista in a more secure mode, as long as you're using passwords occasionally, you know, what they call the standard user account in Windows Vista works fine.
Hallelujah. Now, what is the default when you install?
the first user account that you set up, and actually the only user account you can set up during the interactive setup process, is an administrator class account. But every other user account you set up by default is a standard user, although you can very easily switch it.
And does it say to you, you know, oh, now you shouldn't really be using this administrator account. Please set up another account because that's the one you should be using?
No. In other words, you don't get an account called administrator. In Windows Vista, that account actually does still exist, but it's hidden and it's not on by default. But it's a, I guess what I would call an administrator class account. It has administrative privileges.
Yeah, it's not root, but it's got administrative privileges. Yeah.
Well, given with user account protection and so forth, I honestly, I feel like this thing is secure enough. I don't have any desire to go down to a standard user account for myself, but And I don't. People will, but there are those people out there who you said. Did you say Steve Gibson was running Windows 2000 earlier?
Yeah,
that's hilarious. So
I don't know what he's going to do because it's I think it's almost at end of life. I don't know what, but is it past end of life? He's not alone. A lot of businesses still using Windows 2000, and for a lot of people, and I would include myself, I thought that was the kind of the gold standard for Windows.
Windows 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get me started on that.
I really thought that was the best version of Windows to date.
Yeah.
You disagree, or you can say?
No, I don't. I think that, you know, artificially, there are things available for Windows XP that you just can't get on 2000.
Right.
So from some user standpoint, you know, I can't go back to 2000. There are just things that I can't, you know, have on 2000. But yeah, I mean, and I don't know if part of it is just the day and age it was created or what, but there was something special about Windows 2000, and it was a nice combination of a lightweight OS that ran quickly even on low-end hardware, and just had the right combination of features and security and so forth. Yeah. I thought it was a good release, yeah.
Well, we're just old farts.
Yep.
So let's wrap up with your support saga, because we didn't talk about this on the air last week. We ran out of time. You ordered a Dell, and we're kind of having some troubles, and then I understand you ordered a Mac and had similar problems. Give us the latest.
Okay, so Windows Vista is coming out. I want to buy a new computer. And I looked at the various options out there, and I'm not concerned about getting Windows, you know, a copy of Windows Vista with a computer per se. I mean, I'm obviously,
no, you'll be getting a copy, I'm sure.
I'm going to get a copy, so I'm not going to worry about that too much. But I looked at what was available out there. I want a Core 2 Duo based system. You know,
you want what I want, which is an XPS 700, right?
I don't need a screen. I have a humongous 23-inch widescreen Sony display that I use. So I looked briefly at Apple's iMac, but don't need the screen. And it just, you know, because of that, it kind of priced it out of the competition. So there were two computers I was basically considering. One was a Dell XPS 410, which is their Core 2 Duo based, you know, standard tower desktop. Yeah, and the other one was an HP, I don't remember the model number, but a Media Center PC also based on Core 2 Duo, etc. So I've been buying Dell computers for over a decade, and I have an HP computer right now that I bought 2 years ago to test X64 software back when, you know, the Athlon 64 was the only processor you could get. Dell didn't have any of that stuff, so that thing has actually been my faithful desktop ever since. It's been very reliable. It's worked great, but ultimately, I decided to go with the Dell, and then from then on, it was just a series of unbelievable events where, you know, I would go up and check on the status of my order, and my, you know, the billing address would change, you know, to my old address. The shipping address was changing to my old address, and I would call them and fix it. And
ironically, you know, none of this would have happened if you'd been a new customer. It's only because you'd been such a longtime customer.
It had my right. So they had the address of the house I lived in 5 years ago. Switching back and forth, I'd call them, and I don't, you know, this. I don't mean this to sound racist. I talk to somebody from India every single time I called, and the only reason I mention that is A, it's been in the news, and, you know, outsourcing and so forth. But B, you know, I think when you're spending $1,500 on a computer and you're trying to get support for it before you even have the thing, you know, maybe one of the things they could do is actually allow me to talk to somebody I could understand, you know, and unfortunately, in some of these cases, I actually really had a hard time understanding what they were saying. And in one case, I'm pretty sure the mistake they made was them not understanding me.
Right.
So
I've said this for a while that really, if a company, you know, it's, I understand why you'd outsource stuff. Hey, I want to outsource stuff. You know, you do the stuff that is your core competency, and you let other people handle. I mean, my banking and my accounting and my payroll is handled by somebody else. I'm not going to do that. That'd be crazy. But on the other hand, the most important thing that you as a company do is your interaction with your customer. To me, especially pre-sale, that is the most, that's gold. That's the most valuable interaction. Maybe pre-sale and for the first month after sale. That you would think they'd want to handle that in-house just so that they have that direct contact. They have, you know, they have some ground level contact.
I mean, for me, I don't, you know, it's not like I normally call anybody. I ordered this thing online. I never expected to talk to a human being. I thought it would come in X number of days and that would be the end of it. But I had to proactively call this company, I think, 4 or 5 times. And one morning I got up and checked on my order and it had been canceled.
Oh.
So I called him again and I said, hey, I just want to find out why this was canceled. And she couldn't tell me why, but she said it had something to do with the credit card, which, you know, by the way, has plenty of credit and it was, you know, valid number, et cetera, et cetera. So I said, but listen, don't you want the sale? I mean, why wouldn't you call me? Why wouldn't you email me? You have all this information. Why would you just cancel the sale?
You are just a number in our database, Mr. Trott.
Right. So it says the guy who told me his name was John Smith, by the way.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I said to, you know, as my wife said at the time, she said, you know, if the support is this bad now, I mean, how's it going to be after you already have the machine? So I ordered an HP. I blogged about it.
Are you listening, Michael? Are you listening here?
I got a phone call from a guy who said he was calling on behalf of Michael. That's how he said it. And he said, listen, you know, we want to make this right, you know, et cetera. And I talked to him and I told him that.
Now, was this because you're Paul Thurrott or do you think it was? Okay. So you wrote about this at some point?
Blog. I have that if, well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. I don't know how other people would get to this point. I did blog about it. That's how they found out about it.
I don't think Michael's assistant calls the normal Joe.
I don't think this is necessarily Michael's assistant. This might be just something they say when there's an issue. I don't know.
Hi,
I mean,
I'm calling from Michael's office.
Exactly. I get a queasy feeling when that happens. You have to understand, I'm not walking up here in a cloud or something. I don't like this because, as you just are alluding to here, I don't feel that people are treated this way in general.
Yes. No, I'm with you 100%. I never tell people who I am. I don't want them to know. I want to know what a normal person who doesn't have the power of the press behind them, what they experience.
And it's not like I called Dell and said, you know, do you have any idea who I am?
Yeah, I never do that.
A blogger, you know, I mean, I never said anything. I would never say something like that. So these things are always. Oh, and by the way, the guy called me on a Sunday. So I said, listen, I'm sitting here with my family eating breakfast. I don't know what time zone you're calling from. But around here, it's Sunday. So if you want to call me during the week, we can talk. And he did. He called me the next day. And he was very nice and very Texan, you know, it's clearly for the mothership.
This is no John Smith. Yeah.
And he was a nice guy. And what he basically offered me was, you know, he would expedite the order. He would give me a discount, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, you know, I appreciate the offer and I'll definitely write up that you did the right thing. But I said, I think at this point I'm going to stick with what I did. And, you know, I'll consider you in the future though. I appreciate it. So I thought that was the right thing. It was nice of them to do that. Ultimately, I stuck with the HP, which, by the way, shipped today and, you know, will be here, I think, Monday or whatever.
No, but I think it's completely, if they did it routinely, okay, but it's completely kind of tarnished by the fact that you wrote about it in your blog. You just don't know why they called.
Well, I know he called because of the blog. He told me that. Well, it's fun.
Then I'd be in the same boat with you. It's like, you know, I'm sorry. You got to treat customers better, not because they write about you in their blog.
Right. So, on a related note, it was interesting. So, there was
that. By the way, we want to thank Dell for sponsoring this podcast. in this case, not sponsoring this podcast.
I've absolutely, you know, been buying Dells for 10 years.
No, you know, you don't have to backpedal. That's fine. I'm just putting
in perspective. I feel that by doing what they did, they attempted to make it right, and that, you know, good for them. So, I can't complain about that, but, you know, as we've been saying, I can't also feel that most people would be treated that way, so right. Who knows. Now, as far as the Apple goes, I have a MacBook that I've been using since, oh, I don't know, June, I think I bought it, and it's been fine. I haven't had any issues.
You've been one of the few, I think. You and I, neither of us had problems with our MacBooks.
You're right. I don't have that shutdown issue.
No mooing, no whining.
No, it's fine. It's great. I love it. And it's a nice size. It runs, you know, I have Windows running in Parallels now. I've done the boot camp thing, but you know, I like OS X for what it is. I want to use it for the digital media stuff. It's a great computer. So, but over the course of the year, I've been reading people talking about this discoloration thing. And as the summer went on, I thought it was just my eyes playing a trick on me, but
yeah, they get brown.
Yeah, it's a reddish-brown color. Yep. And, you know, I don't live in a pig pen, necessarily. I'm not.
No. Everybody I know with a white, these are the white MacBooks. I have a black MacBook, no problem at all. But everyone I know with a white MacBook, absolutely, the wrist rest gets discolored, and the mouse trackpad, too.
Now, right. Now, I would say there are products out there where you can cover the wrist pad with something, and I wish I had had one of those things the day I bought the machine. I would have done it. But I don't really feel like I don't feel like this is normal warrant.
No,
you know,
and apparently, I've been told, now I'd be curious what your experience has been, but I've been told that quietly, without announcing it, Apple has been replacing all of those MacBooks.
I heard, so I said, you know what, I'm going to give these guys a call and I'm going to see what happens. And they even have a very small document. It's almost just a single sentence on their support site that says, you know, basically, if you're having a problem, give us a call. So I did. And, you know, I have to say, as with the Dell experience, it was a little disheartening at first. I was put on hold several times for many, many minutes. Talked to people, had no idea what they were doing. They were nice for the most part. The problem was it went up and down. The first guy said, "I don't think they're gonna support this, but if you want to talk to them directly, I'll let you do that." I said, "I do want to do that. Talk to the product support specialist." She told me, "I think we are going to be able to support it. Let me just get some information down. I'll be back in 5 to 7 minutes." She comes back 10 minutes later and says, "You know, we can't support this." I said, "Why not?"
10 minutes.
I was on the phone easily 40 minutes over the course of this thing. But she said, you know, your machine, you know, the product ID or the product number, the model, whatever it is, the what's the machine?
Serial number.
Thank you. Is outside of the range of the machines that we're fixing this problem for. I said, right, but...
But I have the problem.
Tell looking at it that this is not normal wear. This is clearly the same problem. So she suggested that I bring it into an Apple store, and she asked me if I lived in or near Chestnut Hill, which is a local, a semi-local store. And I said, no, I don't live in or near Chestnut Hill. I live in the same state as Chestnut Hill. And so I was a little miffed about that. I wrote up a similar blog entry about, you know, I didn't feel like this was great support.
Oh, the power of the blog, baby.
Plus, I literally just purchased the $250 AppleCare warranty extension.
No. If you had AppleCare and they treated you like that, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I thought that was a little unfair, you know. And I told
Although
her.
I have been told that people who bring them into the store, I think the visual inspection, they can tell immediately.
Right. And that was the one thing. Even as I posted this, I thought to myself, you know, bringing this into an Apple store, even though it's a little inconvenient, would be interesting. Because I have to think that any human being would look at this machine and say, oh, yeah.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to fix this thing right now. So I was actually, I don't want to say I was looking forward to it, but I was curious to see how that was going to go. But I got a call from, you know, the executive, whatever it is.
Hi, Apple. I'm calling from Steve's office.
Muckety muck. He actually didn't say Steve. He said Steve Jobs, but he...
he actually said, calling from... I'm calling on behalf of Steve Jobs. Paul, you've got huge clout.
I know. I thought that was a little weird. No, I don't. I don't. Honestly, in both these cases, I think that they just say these things, you know, and that's fine. You know, so Apple corporate executive relations contacted me. I mean, and by the way, were rabid about contacting me. They contacted me by a phone and email until I finally responded. Going to stop until they figured this thing out. And as with Dell, I think that they did the right thing ultimately, which was, you know, we're really sorry. That shouldn't have happened. We're going to fix this thing. We're going to expedite us. It's your choice. You can either bring it into a store or we'll ship you a box. You can send it back and we'll get it back as quickly as we can. And I said, you know, I said, I was actually kind of looking forward to going to the store, but ultimately I'm just looking to get this problem fixed. Let's do it that way. So they're going to send me a box tomorrow. I'll send it back the same day, and I'll have it back by the end of next week.
Yeah,
so.
And I would encourage people with white MacBooks who are getting that yellowing on the wrist rest. It's very clear when you see it. I mean, I've seen it now in a number of them, and it's obvious. It's not dirt. It's discoloration.
I had an iBook I recently got rid of it. I think I got rid of it.
They don't discolor.
No, it was white. No. I had it for several years. It never discolored.
No,
so
clearly, Apple chose a bad manufacturer or a bad piece of kind of plastic or whatever. Amber's got it. It's happening to Amber. It's happening to Mike, both on call for help. I've seen it a number of times. I think Sean's having it, the same problem. It just, it's what happens to white MacBooks. But my now, I don't know anybody who's actually done this. Well, I do know a few people who've actually done it. But my understanding is you go into the Apple store, they'll say, we can see that. We'll fix it.
Like I said, no one is going to look at this and say, oh, yeah, this will come right off. You know, right. No. Clearly a problem.
They do that a little bit. I do seem to remember somebody saying, oh, let's see if we can clean it. And they try to scour it and stuff. I think that's a little insulting. It's like, you know, you're just a little dirty, and we're going to try to clean this for you.
As it turns out, Mr. Thurrott, you're a pig.
You're a pig. Well, as it turns out, we have dirt to spread everywhere. Not just Dell, but Apple, too. But I'm glad both cases, your tale of woe was satisfied, in one case by HP, in one case by Steve Jobs' office.
Right. Who you have to think is not really my biggest fan, but...
I don't think, Steve, you know, you've said some good things about Max. In fact, in a way, if a Paul Thurrott, a known Windows bigot, says a good thing about Mac, that's gold. That's better than, you know, Walt Mossberg saying something good.
I actually agree with that. But, you know, whatever.
Apple doesn't know.
Paul, that would be an Twitter ad, you know. That's all I'm saying.
It's always a pleasure. I do have to apologize to folks for a little bit of this audio quality here. I don't know why, but sometimes Skype just decides that it doesn't want us both to talk at once, and it's doing that today. So I apologize if it sounds a little stutter step. That's what's going on. We can't both talk at the same time. I am going to be gone next week on a cruise, so unless, Paul, there's some breaking news, and you call me on the boat,
okay,
we'll adjourn this for a couple of weeks and be back talking to you in November.
Are you going someplace good or someplace
fun? I'm going to the Western Caribbean on Mac Mania 5. It's one of those geek cruises. We've got to get you on one. There's a Windows Vista cruise coming up in February. Maybe I can sneak you on.
I don't know about Windows Vista cruises.
What, you don't want to be with a bunch of Windows guys? What is that all about?
that's the beginning of Gilligan's Island.
A 3-hour cruise. Well, I have to say, this will be my first Windows cruise. These are all through geekcruises.com. But I've been on 4 Mac Manias, and it is just great. Because there's this great society, a friendship, but there you learn a lot. And I've just really enjoyed them, so... I'm kind of hooked. I look forward to them. And this is Mac Mania 5. PC Paradise. If you change your mind, it's to the Eastern Caribbean. You can bring the wife and kids February 3rd through 10th.
You never know.
I'll save a place for you, Paul. Paul Thurrott's blog is the power of Paul Thurrott's blog can be beheld. Is that Internet Nexus where you put that?
Yes.
Internet-nexus.com.
And the smallest little blog in the world.
I don't think so. I think it's the most powerful little blog in the world.
It makes me feel queasy, like I said.
Let's put it this way. The blog that Steve Jobs and Michael Dell both read.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't go that far, but...
Shouldn't you? Also, WinSuperSite, which is the great supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and Windows IT Pro Magazine. And, of course, right here on twit.tv. If you like Paul's podcast, Windows Weekly, I think you might want to check out Security Now with Steve Gibson, a great security podcast. We cover a lot of Vista security issues and cool Windows programs. We did Mojo Pack this week. I thought it was a very, very interesting way to run your Windows no matter where you are. Have you tried Mojo Pack?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's amazing. There are some issues, but it basically works. You put it on a USB a drive or thumb drive, and your applications, your desktop, your whole setup goes with you. You could plug into any Windows machine, and it runs, auto-runs, doesn't modify the disk in any way, leaves no traces behind. It's absolutely secure. It's really a cool product. Anyway, you can hear more about it on Security Now. I don't mean to get into an ad for Mojo Pack. We might need them now that Dell's leaving the fold. Thanks, Paul.
Weird.
No, I'm just kidding. Hey, Paul Thurrott, thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. And thank you all for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.